Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome into Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Dustin Hoffman, Riley Smith, Russ Parker, Mark Magnuson, all coming up a little later on in the program. Segment one today is brought to you by Beck, standing up for the things that matter most, faith, independence, and helping farmers succeed. Let's go ahead and run down a few of the headlines we have. Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagy announced this week that 20 Iowa dairies across 12 counties have been awarded Choose Iowa Dairy Innovation Grants to increase on-farm dairy processing, incorporate labor-saving technology, and expand the availability of Iowa dairy products for consumers to enjoy. The announcement was made at the Picket Fence Creamery outside Woodward, which was awarded a grant to significantly expand their on-farm processing capacity. Secretary Nagy said Choose Iowa is about connecting consumers to the great Iowa products that are grown, raised, and made here in the state, and the Choose Iowa Dairy Innovation Grant program helps Iowa dairy farms cost share the addition of new on-farm processing equipment or labor-saving technology, both of which will ultimately lead to more Iowa dairy products for consumers to enjoy. Elsewhere, Iowa 3rd District Congressman Zach Nunn introduced a year-round E15 act that would allow eight states that will have E15 in 2025 to have it this year as well. Nunn said on his website the bill wouldn't be necessary if the administration had done the right thing to begin with, but it's needed to provide certainty for farmers, producers, and families who benefit from less expensive fuel. Nunn says the biofuels support 57,000 jobs in Iowa, which reduces pump prices and decreases greenhouse emissions by roughly 50%. The bill would extend the Reed vapor pressure volatility waiver to ethanol blends above 10% to allow for E15 in Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, Minnesota, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And it got to be an interesting conversation up on the Hill as the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee both heard from Trade Representative Catherine Tai this week about the president's trade agenda. Folks, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, have said that the president hasn't been very aggressive when it comes to trying to get trade agreements and trade practices going. Dave Samuelson of the American Farm Bureau Federation said that both sides of the aisle are worried with the president's lack of direction when it comes to being aggressive on trade.
A lot of discussion was about the fact that this administration does not pursue the traditional trade agreements. There was a lot of discussion about the fact that ag exports aren't keeping up with the volume and dollar value of ag imports, and also the lack of enforcement, especially in bringing trade cases with China. So there was an awful lot of, let us say, suggestions for improvement.
Of course, it got contentious during the House committee meetings, and Adrian Smith of Nebraska did not hold back on what he perceives as the Biden administration giving Mexico a pass to violate USMCA over its GMO ban on corn.
The filing for the dispute resolution was roughly 2 years after the decree, the flagrant violation of USMCA, was made. And I'm concerned that our president has had exactly nothing to say. Is there a downside to our president speaking up and saying that what Mexico is doing with our corn is wrong?
You can find more on these stories, including Trade Representative Catherine Tai's response to these accusations, on our website at iowaagnet.com. That's going to do it for the news headlines and for me here in segment one. Let's turn things over to Russ Parker and his faith-based food for thought.
Was coming home from work the other day, admittedly tired and thinking about something else, and drove into a construction zone, and I knew there was a shortcut around the work area, but I missed the turn and soon was stuck in a long line of cars waiting for the traffic control truck to guide us through the one-lane road. It took me an extra 20 minutes to get home that day, and I was grumpy. Needed one of those chocolate bars. I'm sure you know the feeling. Kind of in the same channel, I tried to make a hotel reservation at a location in Kansas City, Missouri, the other day, and I thought I was calling the hotel directly, but it didn't take long to figure out that I had actually landed in the corporate reservation center when I heard, "What city and state, please?" The communication process from there went completely downhill, especially when we started to talking about several Kansas City locations, street addresses, landmarks. I finally said, "I'll call back another time," hung up, and reached for the chocolate bar. Construction and roadblocks are just normal parts of everyday life. And I remember thinking to myself, seeing a woman wearing one of those t-shirts with a sign pointing to her navel that said, "Under construction," and thinking to myself, yes indeed, only the beginning. Stay in there for as long as you can, kid. But the fact of the matter is that we need roadblocks and construction sites in our lives because they bring us an opportunity to build, grow, and mold our lives into better people. And frankly, those conflicts, challenging decision-making moments, and whys in the road give us opportunities to make a decision, a choice. I'll confess it's taken me a lifetime to understand that eating chocolate bars is not the magical ingredient that turns me back to my old self. It's putting Christ at the front of the process when we ask ourselves, what is his plan, and do we have him at the core? That's where the faith journey continues. Consider the words of Paul, which he wrote to the Philippians while he was in prison. He says, "And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the days of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes from Jesus Christ." Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Russ, and that's going to do it here for segment one of Weekend Ag Matters. We're going to get into segment two. Mark Magnuson will be joining us, talking El Nino, La Nina, and everything that comes in between with the folks at Farmers Business Network. This is Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
The Iowa Soybean Association celebrates National Soy Foods this month in April. Did you know foods containing soy protein provide 9 essential amino acids and reduce the risk for heart disease? Foods made from soybeans such as edamame, tofu, and soy milk are packed with fiber, iron, and zinc. Create a healthy lifestyle while supporting Iowa farmers by consuming more soy-based foods. Brought to you by the Iowa Soybean Association, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, celebrating 60 years of moving the industry forward.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here is Mark Magnuson.
Mark Magnuson for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, and I'm joined today by Mitch Roth with Farmers Business Network. And we're having Mitch on the show here today to talk about a recent report from FBN that is entitled, "How Will El Nino Impact U.S. Farmers This Year?" And Mitch, that's a very interesting discussion topic. We know El Nino ended 2023 with a strong pattern. Could you tell us about the report, what you learned, and kind of where we're at right now, please?
Yeah, so an interesting part about this 2024 growing season is that we're still seeing some lingering effects of El Nino. It's fading as we enter spring, giving us a small normal season in the early part of the summer here, and then we should be transitioning into a La Nina year. So we can have some opposite effects of what the El Nino brought us, with some cooler, wetter conditions as opposed to the warm, dry conditions you've been experiencing in Iowa.
So is this the normal transition period for this to take place if it were to move from El Nino to La Nina, or is this a different time of year? Is there anything strange about this right now?
So it doesn't necessarily transition this quickly, and I'm not a meteorologist by training. I'll put a caveat on that. But my understanding is there's usually more often a few years in between these different cycles, the La Nina versus the El Nino. So a little bit of a unique year in that we're experiencing that transition a little bit more quickly.
So what would you classify as where we are right now, what it has meant for planting and getting ready to get in the fields, or for farmers that already have, to get those crops planted?
Yeah, so the El Nino weather cycles that we've been experiencing throughout most of the winter has led to a more mild winter across much of the Corn Belt and throughout the Midwest, a lot drier than normal as well. And I know that has excited a lot of folks in trying to get out into the field earlier and push those planting dates even earlier. There can be some concerns with that type of warm, dry conditions, even in the end of winter, early spring. If there's not enough moisture in your area, you've got to really monitor your planting depth for corn and soybeans to make sure that that seed gets enough water and moisture to actually start the germination process and really get up and out of the ground. The sooner it can get up and out of the ground, the less likely you'll be to experience some of the early season soil-borne diseases.
So Mitch, you mentioned it, but we are very dry here in Iowa right now. In fact, we're one of the drier parts in the entire Corn Belt. When you think back to last year, we got moisture early in the growing season that helped us out kind of for most of the rest of the year. And when you looked at the rest of the Corn Belt, it was the eastern portion that was really dry towards the back half of 2023. Is there any indication through the report and kind of some of the projections being made of where that rainfall might find the Corn Belt this year? Is there any way to prognosticate that?
Yeah, so it's really hard to draw some strict boundaries because weather changes day to day, week to week, month to month. But the report does show some pretty decent maps of some general trends with some general confidence of, right around the Illinois area, we expect it to be cooler, wetter. As you go further west, it might be cooler yet than average. As you go further east from Illinois, it might be a little bit more closer to normal temperatures, but anticipating more moisture. But these are broad generalizations. Overall, throughout the Corn Belt and the Midwest, we expect it to be on average a little bit cooler, a little bit wetter, and that can come with some different impacts on our standard crops that we grow every year.
And when we talk about extreme weather events, how do they tie into either La Nina and El Nino and whether or not we are likely to see those, or I should say more likely to see those based on what weather pattern we're in?
Yeah, so there can certainly be some significant weather events in either an El Nino or La Nina cycle. We've seen some pretty severe storms in the south over the past week or so as well. But again, those are very localized events, very hard to predict further in the future. But there are some ways you can prepare to try and mitigate some of those potential large-scale events. For instance, if you have struggled with too much moisture in your fields in the past and you don't have drained tile, always a wise investment from an agronomist perspective to mediate and moderate your moisture to mitigate some of those heavy, heavy rainfall and minor flooding events. That tile just helps remove that excess moisture in a timely way. But things like tornadoes and whatnot, hard to prevent those and plan ahead for those, unfortunately, other than perhaps crop insurance.
And then we talked about the likelihood potentially for more moisture or less moisture based on El Nino or La Nina. Is there a way to also then trying to decide which is likely to produce more yield just in general? I know I saw in the report some yield estimates and what either pattern could mean for yield.
Yeah, so thankfully we have a lot of weather data dating back for quite a few years, and that includes data from El Nino years and La Nina years. And the good news is for corn is that in either of these types of weather patterns, either El Nino or La Nina, there tends to be a slightly higher than average yield, anywhere from, I believe it's like 4 to 6 bushels per acre in either type. And we're experiencing both. So should be good news for corn this year. Soybeans, there isn't typically a huge impact in La Nina years, which is what we're entering. However, though, the warm, dry conditions might allow you to plant soybeans a little bit earlier in the season. And there's lots of data out there showing that soybeans can do really well if they're planted early and they adapt really well. So it looks like it should be pretty average, if not slightly above average year for yields for corn and soybeans.
Mitch Roth of Farmers Business Network, our guest here today. Mitch, is there anything else you'd like to let our viewers know about when it comes to this latest weather report from FBN or anything else that you're kind of thinking about going into this growing season?
Yeah, so I'm a plant pathologist by training, so my brain always likes to emphasize scouting your fields for insects and disease pressure because weather will certainly influence those types of pressures. And those are something you can plan ahead for, either or using resistant varieties if you haven't bought your seed yet, or purchasing insecticides, fungicides to plan ahead for diseases that are common in your area. So be on the lookout for that. If you're seeing any diseases or insect pressures, talk to your neighbors and stay safe out there this year and good luck in 2024.
Mitch, thanks so much for helping us to break down all the information in this report and look forward ahead to a great growing season.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you once again to Mitch Roth of Farmers Business Network for helping us to break down that weather report from FBN that details the transition between El Nino to La Nina. You can go to FBN's website to read more on that report. And that does it for segment number two of this week's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Coming up in segment number three, Riley Smith wraps up his coverage from the State FFA Convention in Ames. You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Every day, you navigate a complex business and changing demands. Stay a step ahead with Experior. The first FDA-approved product of its kind, Experior creates the freedom and flexibility to support environmental stewardship without hindering animal performance measures like average daily gain, feed efficiency, and carcass characteristics. Own your future now. Talk to your Lanco representative or visit experiorbeef.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Riley Smith.
This past week was the 96th annual Iowa FFA convention at the campus of Iowa State University. Members gathered in Hilton Coliseum and the Sheman Building to check out various companies and businesses around the industry, invest more in their futures by visiting with schools, and of course compete in contests to showcase their skills. I had the chance to go around and visit with a few people at convention. First off was Andy Zare of Iowa State University Student Services. He said State Convention provides an excellent networking opportunity.
Every year now we're talking about a FFA convention and having all the kids out here, of course. Always a great time to have those members out, right?
Oh, exactly. This is the best time of year for us to have a lot of students on campus getting used to what the field of agriculture has to offer, especially in higher ed. Getting them into some facilities maybe while they're on campus, getting them competing and meeting other FFA members. So it's a great networking opportunity and a great way to celebrate agriculture.
So, of course, I think a big thing just from physically looking at campus is there's a lot of change right now. I mean, you get off the interstate, you can see the new vet diagnostics lab. You get to the parking lot, and the whole main parking lot has been uprooted for new renovations there. I mean, you can see the new parking lots there as well. So, you know, like you said, a great time to have these students here, because lots of new and improved things are going on here at Iowa State.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's always something cooking up, I think, on campus. And I think for a lot of our FFA members, it might be their first time to campus or it might be their third, you know. And the same thing goes with our alumni who are agricultural teachers on campus. It's always great for them to refamiliarize themselves with what we have to offer. And it can help them to bring some of that into the classroom as well.
Right, and just having all those students, like you said, on campus, you know, we always talk about the future leaders of the ag industry. That's those FFA members, and to have them on campus. We're here at one of the top ag schools, if not the top ag school in the country. I mean, they're getting hands-on experience, which is huge in FFA, of seeing exactly what it's like here, the facilities, and what the university has to offer.
Yeah, 100%. Again, that's the goal, is to get them here, get them experiencing some things, and then building on that experience to build some confidence, some leadership skills, some communication skills. They really get to accomplish all of that, and FFA is just the introduction to that. It's the initial entry point, but if they liked FFA, they're going to love their Iowa State experience.
And of course, here as well, we have the contest going on the other side of the building, and I mean, what an experience for that as well, because you know, you get to see, you know, let's talk about the students getting to see firsthand. The university gets to see firsthand what these students are capable of.
Oh, 100%. In fact, there's a lot of university employees representing our different departments that serve as judges in those roles. And I can tell you with certainty that it's every single year I'm hearing from somebody saying, hey, there's this student from this chapter that just did an amazing job in whatever competition. And they keep an eye on those folks. They develop those relationships and they keep up with them. And I always think that that's kind of the cool side benefit that you get at an event with 6,000 students, that an academic advisor comes back and says, hey, remember this one student. That's pretty awesome.
And I'm sure you've seen the impact of FFA through the programs at Iowa State, right? Seeing those students come through.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, a lot of students come in and this was their initial entry point, but by the time they're done with their FFA experience, they're comfortable with campus and they're getting to know it. And I also see students like my own who's in an FFA chapter, but he's not from a traditional farming background. I'm I'm an Iowa State employee and not a farmer, right? And so his experience and exposure to agriculture is through the eyes of an FFA chapter or through the eyes of what he sees in terms of the scientists on campus. And it's a great way for him to see how big this industry is and what the opportunities look like.
And of course, let's talk a little bit too about tours going on here on campus. What are those students able to see here through those tours? And I guess, what are you hoping they take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot to offer. I mean, some of the most popular ones are Jack Trice Stadium, where our turf grass management faculty show them how they maintain an athletic field. And that's very different from a BioCentury research farm facility, where we're talking about alternative uses for crops and making things like asphalt out of renewable resources that Iowa farmers could potentially grow. And meat lab tours, seeing where meat comes from and how we study how to make safe meat products and things like that. So there's a really wide variety, and what I hope that our students take away from that is, if you have an interest in agriculture, there's so many things that maybe you didn't think of on first blush besides, you know, your traditional row crop farming that you could do in the agricultural industry. And we hope that showing them things like Jack Trice and the BioCentury Research Farm inspires them to think bigger than what they currently think about the ag industry.
All right, Andy, lots of great information today. For those of our listeners, especially if we got students listening who are interested to learn more about Iowa State University, who can they talk to, or where should they go to find that information?
Yeah, so we'd be happy to host them here on campus today or any other day of the year. Otherwise, if you just email the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, CALS@iastate.edu, myself and a group of my teammates, I'll answer that. So we'd be happy to help them. And you can also check out cals.iastate.edu.
All right, Andy, great talking with you here as always at Iowa State Convention.
Yep, great to see you again.
The Iowa Corn Growers Association had its educational trailer outside of Hilton Coliseum for students to check out through convention. Mike Finardi, Iowa Corn Growers Promotion and Education Spokesperson, said students were able to see how their FFA experiences can lead into their future careers.
You know, getting those students involved and having them be able to check out something like this, a great opportunity. How's it gone so far, and what are the students really enjoyed about having this trailer here?
Today's been a great day. We've had a lot of students come down, not only go through our trailer, but we have cornhole games set up outside. I have an inflatable cornhole game also, but it's a beautiful day. And one of the things is, one, learning about how they can take their FFA adventures right now and go into the future with Iowa Corn Growers Association.
So tell us a little bit about what is included in the Mobile Education Center. You know, what exactly these members are learning about as they go through?
The Corn Education Trailer is all about how, one, what we use farming for, how we do practices from technology, and any questions related to farming, just to get everyone that doesn't farm a better indication of questions they might have, but two, on how every consumer out there uses products that have parts of corn in them and why we're using corn, because one, it's renewable, it's obviously we're very good at growing more corn every year, and we can make a lot of products from all the different parts of the corn.
And even, you know, aside from having students come out to learn, when you have people in general just learning through this trailer of all the different products that corn is involved in, obviously we know about all the food, ethanol, a big one right now, but there's even, you know, just more minor stuff that you wouldn't really think about.
The normal we think of is food, feed, and fuel for livestock, etc. But on the other side, we can actually make bioplastics. The absorbent part of a diaper actually is made from cornstarch. It's things that we use every day, like toothpaste and shampoo, and can be even hand soap.
All right, Mike, and is there anything else that our listeners should know about when it comes to being out here at FFA and being able to talk with these students?
This is a great platform. These FFA students actually have a good background starting in agriculture, and we want to continue that leadership ability and that knowledge going forward in our ag society right here in Iowa.
All right, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to visit today.
Not a problem. Thank you.
And finally, I also had the chance to visit with some Audubon FFA members to talk about their mission trip with GoServe Global to Liberia that they took this past winter. GoServe Global provides support to all people who are in need, and a lot of that support comes in the form of Sukup Safety Homes, which are made from grain bins, and they actually had one of those outside of Hilton Coliseum for people to check out. Audubon FFA members Addie Hooker, Colton Hansen, Kerrigan Larson, and Edward Miller were at convention and took the time to explain what their trip was like. Hooker said she enjoyed the opportunity to observe how people over there live their lives.
It was such an incredible trip. It was such an amazing opportunity that our FFA chapter got to be able to be a part of and just spread joy and spread love to those in Liberia. It was awesome to be able to have all the children around us and to be able to just spread joy and live simply.
Hansen said it was also interesting to check out how they grow different crops.
The one day we planted some cassava and pineapple, and it was kind of cool to learn how they do that there. We did a lot playing with the kids and just having a good time with them and spending quality time to put a smile on their face, and they put a lot of smile on ours.
It's a much more simple and fluid way of life in Liberia, which Larson said is something that she admired during her visit.
The simplicity in life, how they live it. I feel like we definitely overcomplicate things and we run at a very fast pace while they're go with the flow. However things happen. So I admire that and their happiness.
Miller echoed those sentiments and he added that the people they met are able to find joy in connecting with the world around them.
It was great to go and see perspective, see how everyone else, see how they can find joy in other things where we find it in materialistic things, and see how they find joy through people and family and ways they can connect with the world.
For more information on mission trips like this, visit goserveglobal.org. And that's it for today's episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Thanks again for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and more by going to the podcast tab on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network website at iowaagnet.com. For Russ Parker, Mark Magnuson, and Dustin Huffman, I'm Riley Smith, wishing you a great rest of your weekend. Join us again next week for more Weekend Ag Matters.